This is After the Credits, the home of correct movie opinions since 2007.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 344 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
The team is back together. I think we were together last time, too. So.
We were, yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those days. It's hot. We are well hydrated. Are we lubricated? Are we hydrated? I've got an entire bottle of soju in here.
Oh, nice.
Our sponsor.
Our unofficial sponsor. Oh, Summersby. Okay, I think Bill is winning at this one, to be honest.
Hell yeah, I am.
The company I'm drinking doesn't need our ad help. So. I won't show it.
I think we must also, we did say this beforehand, but Melissa, I think we dedicate this episode to our new subscriber. The waitress where?
Yes, a lovely waitress at Resurrection Spirits. So if you're listening, hopefully you're listening, and hopefully that wasn't just a show. But
this one's for you.
Yeah, this one's for you.
That's so that's really fucked up, because this is her, like, the movie we picked is like a bruiser of a movie. Oh, so like, man, we dedicate this to you.
Maybe this one's not for you. Maybe the next nicer, gentler one.
I'm just saying, we got to be honest, right?
Go ahead, Bill.
So, speaking of subscribers, a friend of mine texted me a couple of days ago. I guess they listened to the show, and they're like, "Bill, why are you so angry at Mission Impossible?"
You were very harsh about it, and usually I'm the one that's being very harsh.
He's like, "You're such a calm, nice person. Why are you yelling at all your coworkers here?" And I'm like, "I don't know.
It's Tom Cruise, and I have issues with Tom.
I think I figured it out. I just think it's just been a really bad movie year, and I haven't liked movies this year. I don't know. It's
really dry.
Yeah, I looked at my letterbox list, and I've rated nothing above 4 stars. That's pretty rare.
That kind of changed for me. Well, there's a few. I mean, Sinners for me is like best of the year. But I have a couple this week.
Nice.
That notch as the best movies I've seen this year.
I literally watched 4 movies this week, and 3 of them I watched yesterday.
Nice.
At least you had a crash through.
I saw maybe, I don't know, 30 or 40% of the movie before the podcast started, and it was fucking killer.
Which one?
The new Predator animated movie.
Oh, dude, that's one of the ones I watched.
That's one of the ones I have on my list this week, too.
That movie slaps. That movie is fucking awesome, is what it is. And I have to take something back, because I've been dissing Dan Trachtenberg for, like,
since
Cloverfield Lane, and okay, I take it back.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll accept that.
Guess we'll talk about that one later, I guess.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But let's talk about let's kick things off with the movie for this week. Bring Her Back, the new film from the Philippou brothers, who did Talk to Me. Holy shit, this movie, guys.
Yeah, this is better than Talk to Me, in my opinion. I'm just going to say it right out the gate.
I totally agreed.
Yeah, it's weird, because I saw an interview where they were talking about how they had both of these films ready to go. Talk to Me just got off the ground first, so that's the one they made first. But this, even like thematically, I think is way more nuanced than Talk to Me is, even though Talk to Me had some really interesting ideas as well. I think what gets me about this movie is just, yes, it's kind of vicious, but it is so emotionally draining. Mm-hmm. Like, Dan texted me after, he's like, "How was the movie?" I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I'm totally speechless. It left me feeling drained.
Yeah. It was like a Sally Hawkins performance unlike anything I've ever seen before, but still something I knew that she had within her wheelhouse to do, which is so crazy. It also makes me look at the actress quite a bit differently for the next little bit. Like, it gave me like trauma for her, but at the same time, I don't know. It's what grief did to her. Like, so it's like, I don't know. This movie's so complex.
Yeah.
And no, it's just beautiful, just beautifully done. And it's bruising. And I said in the group chat that this movie chewed me up and spit me out, because that's honestly how I felt this movie. I felt like this movie, you're going through the grinder. And however you come out on the other side.
100%.
This is, I think, a really unique thing in horror, because it's very much a character-driven horror.
Yes.
If this is less like, it, not that the plot is unimportant, but I really feel like this is really character-driven. It's really about character arcs. It's really about, like, yeah, past traumas and how people are coping with them. And that, it like, it just resonates. It hits really hard, I think, this film, in a way that, like, Talk to Me was brilliant because the concept of it was brilliant. It was like so inherently scary, that just the concept of it, but they didn't quite stick the landing. This, I feel like, is a really well, fully formed film with some pretty genius performances. Like, Sally Hawkins is brilliant. I also think that the kid that played Andy was also brilliant.
Yeah.
Billy Barrett.
Yeah,
he's fantastic.
And the Piper, Sora Wong. She was chosen. She was they had an actor search. She'd never acted before, so really, really great work from her. And that Jonah Renn Phillips, who I was like, I've seen this kid before. It turns out I had Sweet Tooth. Plays the bird kid.
Ollie.
So let's probably not sugarcoat this. I honestly can't think of a more violent Hollywood film long time, like, agreed, almost to the point where this is, I'm hardcore, and I can take a lot of stuff. I had a Serbian film on my top 10 one year. Like, wow. I am a psychopath. And I'm watching this, I'm like, man, this film is rough.
Yeah.
But it's weird, because you think about it, though, and there are a couple of scenes that are, like, clearly very, like, over the top, violent. But for the majority of the movie, I think it's really the emotional punch that, like, elevates everything.
But this,
I thought about it afterwards, and I'm like, nothing here is really worse than anything you would see in, like, Pearl or any of the slasher movies.
I don't know about that.
Tearing strips out of your own arm.
Well, but I think that works even more because of the emotional connection to the character.
And because it's a child.
And because it's a kid,
Yeah.
The fucking countertop. Like, there's much. Jesus Christ.
The knife scene. I couldn't look at the screen. I'm like,
I will never cut cantaloupe the same way ever.
Yeah, no, it's
intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel unnecessary. It just felt like, you know what I mean? It's not like, done for shock value. It all works within the context of the story. And it's, did you see that also the Filippo brothers said that this is in the same universe, shared universe as Talk to Me?
Yeah.
This all exists in the same.
This is
Australia is really fucked up right now.
No kidding, right?
Australia is going through some shit.
So did you notice that that the woman who was in Talk to Me actually is listed in the credits in this film, Sophie Wilde? Really? I don't think I clocked her in the movie.
No, I don't think I clocked her at all in that movie.
I think she might have been one of the moms who was at the pool or at the gym. At the gym. Because she's listed as middle-aged mom in the credits. Oh,
weird.
That scene is so great when Sally Hawkins runs in and grabs her and she's like, "We talk about the eye," and just runs away. It's so good.
Sally Hawkins is operating on another level here.
I don't really want to steal Steve's thunder, but I think this might be one of the best films of the year.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
I think it's a big step up from Talk to Me. Like, that movie,
huge.
That movie did not, as Melissa said, that movie did not, it ran out of steam. Great process until like 20 minutes ago, and then just kind of yeah, went off a cliff.
There are some really great stuff in Talk to Me that I really like. Sure. And there are promises there. And I think I even said, like, I'm excited for whatever they're going to do next. And holy fuck.
The first three quarters of Talk to Me are absolutely brilliant. It is legitimately scary horror movie. This one, like I said, like I just feel like so much of this is psychological and character driven. Which I think makes it so much more relatable and resonant. And that's how it gets completely under your skin.
I was also waiting for them to do something wrong, something Hollywood. Mm. And it just never came. This movie felt like very original and well thought out. And they really stuck the landing on this one.
Well, even the ad campaign for it is very ambiguous. The trailers didn't really give you a lot to work with as far as what the movie is going to be about.
You can know the premise of the film. You can know that this is about like a foster mom who's trying to put dead kids into foster kids. You can know that. And it doesn't ruin the film for you by any stretch of the imagination, because where it goes and what it does with that snippet of a concept or a plot will still surprise you and shock you.
The peeing scene.
Oh, that killed me.
Absolutely. I almost laughed in theaters.
The punching scene where she punches.
That was insane. Oh. It's such a shock too.
Yeah.
And there's no like musical cue. There's nothing. It's just
thump.
Which is why it's so effective.
Yeah.
It's the same with that scene towards the end with the car.
Yeah.
And then the car backs up.
That was
all off camera and all you hear is the sound. Done. That was like, oh.
Because that was a practical dummy, right? Like the one social worker, Wendy. Wendy was it?
Yeah.
Like holy fuck, it's insane. That was
like this movie so is on, well done. It really gets under your skin.
Yeah, and I love how it addresses blindness, even from the first like running the hands along the walls and stuff. I thought it was really really well done. This movie is so interesting to look at all times. It never strays from that, but it also never lets you forget Piper's disability, right? So I think they did a really great job with that.
The sound design in this film is off the charts good.
Agreed.
I don't think there's not a lot of other films that are working at this level in terms of sound design. Like I'd put this up there with like a Lynn Ramsey film in terms of sound design.
I agree. That gym scene in particular was so good. So well done.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this movie was made for the coffee budget of Mission Impossible. So I'm really happy that the Philippou brothers had a pretty decently big hit from their last movie and then proceeded to make another low budget horror film instead of becoming, you know, Loki season 3 directors, which, you know, has happened.
And nothing against Benson and Moorhead.
No, exactly. But like, I forgot they didn't say shit. Sorry.
it's not an After the Credits podcast unless we mention Benson and Moorhead.
Yeah.
Right? No, this is becoming a thing now.
Yeah. Then we got to have them on the show eventually.
So I was going to say, this is going to become a thing where at some point we need to say, guys,
you need to get get the Soju company to sponsor us and we need Benson and Moorhead on.
That's once we change the name of the show to the Benson and Moorhead podcast.
Benson and Moorhead and Dan Stevens.
Yes. Oh, which I have something this week to add to that as well. So, hey.
Nice.
The themes continue. I love it. Yeah, I really, really like this movie. It's just such a difficult watch. Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm prepared to watch this again anytime soon.
So yeah,
it really took it out of me.
The two most brutal scenes kind of happened kind of back to back. And the first one took maybe 20 people out of my audience. And the next scene kind of took another probably 20 out of my audience.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Yeah, just unrelenting. Horror.
It's very intense. It's super intense.
It's funny because this was a the landmark horror mystery movie a few weeks ago, And I'm wondering how many people walked out of that one, because maybe you need to be a little prepared for this movie.
As a friend of mine who saw it a couple of weeks ago before that it opened, he was like, do you like Lucio Fulci? And I'm like, oh shit.
There's a face stabbing coming.
He's like, it's like a new modern day version of Lucio Fulci. And I'm like, all right, I'm down with that. And I was still was just like, ugh, what?
Yeah.
But again, it was the sound, because you hear it before you see it.
Before you see it. Yeah. It is hard. I read the behind the scenes that this kid chewed on a rubber knife. Just the implications, the giving himself like a cleft palate and stuff, and like, there's so much grossness, especially because there's so many shots later on in the movie that are just how emaciated, distended, and everything, how monstrous. There's some really, really great blurry shots. The devil horn shot, I swear it was devil horn. Like, it's so quick, but it's just so,
I agree.
Oh, there's this, they really nailed the imagery in this one. Like, for a sophomore film, they really upped the ante on this film. Well, at the same time, like, I mean, had to have shot it for less money.
Yeah.
There's really one large location and a couple others off-site locations.
Yeah, it's, I'm sure it didn't cost a lot.
No. Brilliant stuff. Yeah. And just like another one to say that A24 is still here. Like, we know you all love Neon right now, but A24 is still here.
Okay. Are they going to now be stuck making Talk to Me 2 and 3, which I happened to notice was on their upcoming?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Well, I mean, it's something that they can make. I hope they can smile it and it gets better with the second the film. I think Smile is a better film than Talk to Me.
I haven't seen
Smile 2 definitely is.
Yeah, yes. Smile 2 is awesome. But
Smile 2 awesome. I like better than Smile 1. So that's what I mean. Like, if they can make a superior film than their first film, then they'll justify the existence of a second sequel, you know?
Speaking I think we of, can't underestimate the what Sally Hawkins also brings to the role. There is an interview that they did with something. I can't remember what it was now. And they were talking about how she came back with notes on the script and how it elevated the character to a level that they hadn't expected. Mm-hmm. And like you guys say, it's not like she's never made a horror movie. And when you think about it, she doesn't play it like a horror movie. She plays it like a traumatized mother who is desperate to do anything at any cost to bring her daughter back, which I think is why the film really, really works. Cause it really hinges on that.
But the manipulation,
yeah,
it's so evil.
It like, is.
It's just so it's very evil. Twisted. Like, I'm gonna put her in like the Margaret White category of movie moms.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like,
go with that.
Like, it's just so twisted. Like, when you finally realize what Andy's been through, and then what she does with that information.
Yeah, true.
It's just so incredibly cruel. So yeah, it's like hard, because if you only see her as the grieving mom, like, you're gonna have more sympathy for her than I think she really deserves.
Yeah,
that's true.
Some of that stuff, like the funeral scene, that's the stuff I found actually more cruel and hurtful and harder to watch than even the gorier scenes in the film.
Yeah.
Cause it's so mean. It's just so cruel to, and you're thinking like, this is a 17-year-old kid and you are just, you're fucking him up so bad right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of A24, I shouldn't really be talking about this, but a buddy of mine, A24's next movie, I won't say the name cause I don't want to ruin it, but, I've seen it. A buddy of mine passed me a link. It's my favorite film of the year.
Oh, shit. Well, now I'm
really now excited. I'm like, which is so the
what,
next
thing? Why don't you tell us what it is?
Now I'm really excited for Eddington.
Yeah, it's okay. Not Eddington.
No. Nope.
Okay.
No. I wish I'd seen that.
Will you just tell us? Come on.
It's called Sorry Baby.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I've heard about this film. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. It's incredible. It destroyed me. Yeah.
There was a sopping mess this week, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Ballerina. Fuck, dude. Baby. Cry.
Listen, it does have Keanu Reeves, so I believe it.
In like 5 minutes of screen time.
Yeah. He kills. Not doesn't much, matter. But yeah. He does kill a lot of people, and that's true.
I'll give you till midnight.
Till midnight.
It's the hair. It's all about the hair and the suit. Okay, so back to Bring Her Back. I think it's fair to say it is really, really good. But with an asterisk that it is an exceptionally difficult watch.
Yes, it is also
even for fans of horror movies.
It is made for the theaters, though, at the same time. So if you're going to see this, you have an interest to see it. You owe it to yourself to see it in theaters.
I agree.
Because like
the sound design alone is worth the price of admission.
Sound design and cinematography.
And plus, we have to support horror movies.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And they are great. They deserve your money. And you will be satisfied after watching this film, even if you're a little scarred.
Yep. Oh, very scarred, to be honest. Very scarred.
Marina's still shaking.
I am. I honestly don't know when I'm going to be able to watch this again, because it is super intense. I was definitely like not fully together after that.
It's a beating.
It really is.
Seriously, is a beating.
It really is.
It was. I wrote this on Letterboxd, but I find like, so a horror movie for me is super effective. If at some point during the movie, my hands involuntarily fly up in front of my mouth. Like, it's not that I'm like suppressing a scream, because I don't think that I would actually scream, but somehow when something is truly shocking to me, that's exactly what happens, is my hands just fly up and cover my mouth. And that happened to me twice during this movie.
I look away from the screen, and that happened to me at least once. That I fully remember going, okay, I cannot watch that anymore. Okay, it's over. Now we're back. We're back. It was hard. It was a hard watch.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hard watch. Don't regret it, but it was a hard watch.
I don't know, Marina. We could have done the Wes Anderson film if you wanted to.
Well, I look forward to your review of the Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, maybe later.
That was my Bring Her Back palate cleanser. I felt like I can't go see this by myself and then just go home after. Like, I'm going to have to see something afterwards. So I did a double bill with the Phoenician Scheme.
Okay, so talk about the Phoenician Scheme.
I would have had to drive further afterwards, so.
Fair.
Okay, so talk to us about the Phoenician Scheme.
Nah.
Oh.
Don't all jump in at once.
I was waiting for Melissa. Sorry. She kind of brought it up. So.
Nah.
I don't think this is going to be the Wes Anderson movie that wins you over, Marina.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. But I will say this felt closer to, like, so my favorite Anderson films, the live action one, I think the animation has been universally great. I think the live action films, though, for me, it's like absolutely Royal Tenenbaums. I love Moonrise Kingdom, and I really like the Grand Budapest Hotel. This, to me, feels closer to those than it did to Asteroid City or The French Connection or The French Dispatch. Well,
before you go on, just because I've seen this movie, do you like the Darjeeling Limited? See, this movie kind of reminded me of Darjeeling Limited. Mm. And I like that movie quite a bit. So
okay.
I like this one quite a bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's both good reviews gives me hope. As a Wes Anderson fan, that gives me way more hope.
I'm also, for me, it's like I'm a sucker for a father-daughter story. And that is kind of the crux of this. And I think when Anderson is good, it's because he's focusing on a central relationship in a film. And so that's kind of what this is about. It's really mostly about Benicio del Toro and Mia Threpleton, and their relationship, repairing their relationship as an estranged father and daughter. And so I think that works better than some of these like giant cast things where there's just too many characters and too much going on. So that to me made it a lot more effective. And the two of them had really good chemistry, I thought. And Michael Cera was hilarious and perfect.
Michael Cera's hot girl take off the glasses moment made me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good. It was very good.
The reversal on that was quite good.
Yeah.
I like the father-daughter relationship stuff. I also like that like half of Hollywood's in this film and they just keep on showing up and showing up, like just like every Wes Anderson film. I do have some problems with it. Like, this is not like A-tier Wes Anderson. Like, I wouldn't even go close to that. Darjeeling's more serious. This has still got some like pretty funny humor in it. And I also didn't notice the sets as much as I usually do. I thought it a lot more muted than it usually is, which maybe he got destroyed after Asteroid City, because that movie was just like, everything was just like, looked like it had been storyboarded. And it pissed me off. I found this one to be really straightforward. Usually his films are a little bit more something else, and it just felt like a regular story and just some wacky stuff happens. To tell you the truth, Marina, I think this might actually be the one that you probably should watch, because I do think it's very straightforward and just not a lot of like weirdness. There's some weirdness, but it's not the usual stuff. I think you would like it. I don't know. Everybody in my theater hated it. They even like said it. So I don't quite get it. Like, I don't know I don't know what they wanted from it. Do they want Rushmore? Do they want, I don't know. It's just, people are strange.
Well, I'm excited. I'm hopefully going to see it next weekend. I'm hopefully going to see it on Father's Day. On Father's Day, I'm going to drive out by myself to Kelowna to see Phineas's Scheme.
See, this is a good Father's Day movie, because it actually, the central relationship is really interesting. And I didn't realize, so Mia Threapleton is
Kate Winslet's daughter.
Kate Winslet's daughter.
Yeah.
Is she good in this one?
She is good in this one. Yeah. Yes, I mean,
that's good.
It's the thing is it's Wes Anderson, right? Everybody's really deadpan. So, you know, so it's like the perfect vehicle for a Michael Cera, because that's his bread and butter.
That's right? His shtick.
Yeah. And Del Toro was really charming, I thought, in this film. I really enjoyed him. He did. There was a little bit of shades of Royal Tenenbaum there for me. Not enough of
it's Hackman-esque without like the awesome Gene Hackman-ness.
Yeah.
And Matthew Almeric's in it. And
I love Matthew Almeric. Ever since Diving Bell and the Butterfly,
he's very scene stealing in this film too, actually. And also Richard Ayoade, I would say.
Yes.
A big scene stealer.
Yes, big fan.
But maybe I'm just partial because he's playing a communist revolutionary.
Yep. Love it.
And he's Maurice Moss.
Yes.
For all you IT crowd fans.
And a pretty solid filmmaker himself.
Yeah. Agreed.
I missed that show, man. Damn it.
Yep.
Did you try turning it off and then turning it on again?
That is Dan's funniest thing. Like, that is his line.
Yeah.
He is in IT. He was in IT for a long time. So that was always the first line of defense. Have you tried turning it on and turning it back off again?
Well, because I'm married to a Jen, where it's always, what's Jen doing with the internet?
Fucking love it. I love it.
It's our line.
So Melissa says I won't like it. Bill says I might.
I think I'll like it. That's where I'm coming out on my prediction for this.
Yeah, I think I liked it. I think it's still heavier on aesthetic than plot. So that's what I think will annoy you, Marina. but the reason that I score this a lot higher than his most recent offerings is because, again, like, I just think he's so much better when he's dealing with like an actual relationship and a relationship arc. I think that's where things get way stronger with Anderson. And that is part of what you're getting here, which makes it a little bit better for me, even though the plot is a bit convoluted and silly.
But generally, it sounds like you both enjoyed it. So
He's not up his own ass this movie. Like the last two movies have just been awful. I really did not like Asteroid City. I thought it was a complete waste of time.
I know. I really wanted to like Asteroid City.
I did too. Yeah. It was the first time I think I'd really like been hurt by Wes Anderson. Yeah. I don't know.
You hurt me. All right.
Other than Life Aquatic.
let's not get into this again.
It was a very good palate cleanser after Bring Her Back, because it's like the polar opposite movie to Bring Her Back.
I had like a 55 minute drive where I'm just kind of just like in like a stunned like stupor, just kind of like focus on the road.
Well, when you go and see the Phoenician Scheme, make sure you have a Wes Anderson playlist. Lots of the Kinks.
Like that. Nice. I will. Yeah. That's good. I like it.
Let's talk about another new release, which we alluded to at the beginning of the show. Predator, Killer of Killers.
Yes. I got this good, guys. Yeah. I got the screener for this one and I had to sit on my like review for it for a little bit. Oh, this movie rocked. It's like anthology, so and then like bringing it all together for a third act. Like it's, oh,
I
it's
was
so
fully
well
prepared
done.
To watch like 4 15-minute episodes, and then we loaded it up, and it's like an hour and 28 minutes or whatever. I'm like, I guess it's a movie, but it is so good, so good, so good. Mm-hmm. And worth noting, The Third Floor, that who has never made animation in their lives, like animated this entire thing. Like they're known for their previs and their VFX work. So I didn't even know they did animation. All of a sudden they unload this, which full disclosure is not like, you know, the greatest animation of all time. It's not even like particularly subtle, but it really works for the story. But the storytelling really fucking works. And as I mentioned at the top, like I have been hating on Dan Trachtenberg for when I think about it, it's kind of unreasonable because I didn't hate 10 Cloverfield Lane. I just didn't really like it. I thought it was a waste of a perfectly, you know, possibly great sequel. But what he has done with the Predator movies has been like top notch. And I'm like, okay, you can keep making Predator movies for the rest of your fucking life. I don't care, man. I will watch them all.
Yeah, so, it makes me very excited for Badlands.
No kidding.
I didn't know you didn't like the last Predator movie, Marina. That's weird.
No, I liked Prey.
Okay.
No, I liked Prey a lot.
So you just don't like 10 Cloverfield Lane? So you
yes, you that's like what that I mean. It's like this unreasonable dislike. Okay. You know, part of it is, you know, he made that Portals, I think it was a short film, which I thought was okay, but it came out around the same time there were these other like filmmakers making some things that were like way better. And I kind of felt like he got tapped. Like he was not the best of the bunch and he got tapped to make a movie and then he is given like another big franchise and I'm like, really? Like, why don't you give this to a woman? I was having a moment. So like in the back of my mind, I'm always like, Dan is a hack. So I take it back. Two movies in, that's all it took. Two good movies. And I'm like, okay, so maybe
I just want to say that I fucking love 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, me too.
I thought it was actually a brilliant sequel because it doesn't feel like a sequel till the very end.
Yeah.
It's true.
I really love that movie too.
I have feelings against it. I don't like it. And that wore off on me. And since then I've been like, Dan, but okay, so I take it back. I fully admit he is a very good storyteller, at least in the Predator universe. Take it all back. Keep making all the Predator movies because they are fucking amazing.
Marina, you know? if you wanted to yell out, fuck 10 Cloverfield Lane and steal my gimmick, I will let you do it. I am fully allowing you to do that if you want to do that. It's freeing.
No, it's been a while since I saw it, so now I'm like, was it even as bad as I remember it to be? Maybe not. No, I don't know.
Nobody has enough, as much angry resolve as Bill.
It's true. It's true. I am not that angry, I don't think.
I'm not angry either. It's weird.
But whatever said about the animation, for the action stuff, it all works so beautifully well. And the gore.
It is beautiful. Yeah, but it's really the storytelling that I think like notches this up like above, a step above what it could possibly have been. Because I mean, without the interconnection of the stories and just how good they are, I think this would have fallen flat. Like, it doesn't matter how good the animation is, it was never going to survive. And it is, but like the storytelling is really that good.
Yeah. And they teased the return of Amber Midthunder.
Yeah. It's super solid. Like, if you have not, like, Disney, I'm okay with this. They can keep making better movies.
I wish one of you guys would give me the heads up, because I watched like half of this right before we recorded the podcast. And I was just like, fuck, I wish I could finish this. But nobody told me it was good.
I thought you stalked my letterbox.
No, I've been busy.
I have reviewed it on here.
Okay, not true. I a couple days ago saw that Melissa went like ham and watched a bunch of movies. So
I did. Yeah. My section's gonna be long.
Yeah.
I didn't and I, like I said, I watched four movies this for this show. I watched three of them yesterday. So I haven't updated anything. And I had literally, this was the second movie out of three last night.
So. I'm two behind in logging. And one of them we already talked about, which is Bring Her Back. So
nice.
I usually keep a backlog, and then, you know, I dump them all after we've talked about them.
There we go.
But Predator, Killer of Killers, really good. If you have Disney Plus, see it. Yeah. You will not be disappointed. It is fantastic.
Would have loved to, as I've only seen half of it, I would have loved to have seen this on the big screen. Just a little
agreed.
Nudge there, Hulu, whoever paid for this.
Just like Prey.
Disney money.
Yeah. Should have shown it on the big screen. Just like No One Will Save You, should have shown it on the big screen.
Yep.
Since I only have two other movies, guys, I'm going to finish this off because I don't have a lot to talk about. I watched Mountain Head, the Jesse Armstrong movie. Yeah, pretty much. Dan was disappointed, I gotta tell ya.
It's not good? I thought it's had good reviews. Good,
it's awful.
It starts off well enough.
Does it though?
It does. I think it starts off pretty fun. From that mountaintop scene where they scream their fucking net worth and whatever other bullshit their tech bros do, it's like a steep downhill from there. And that's like 20 minutes in.
Hey, let's write the amount of money we have on our chest because we're pretentious assholes.
Because they are pretentious assholes. Like,
no, but that's just the problem. I don't want to see this. This is real life now. Like, this isn't like some sort of like satire fictional thing. Like, this is tomorrow as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, I think the timing is unfortunate. Yeah. However, I also think he could have gone. I don't think that for the satire, it goes far enough.
No, and that's what kind of made Succession great, is because it was actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
This has no humor. It just makes you angry.
It does make you angry.
Yeah, and which sucks because the actors were really good and they deserve better material. Even Steve Carell doing his yell thing, I thought was quite funny at times, but like, it gets really stupid. Like they become like really all heady and they decide to do something really dumb in the third act. And it kind of falls apart even more. I didn't think that was possible. Yeah. It's terrible.
It's not very good.
And for the fact that it's Jesse Armstrong makes it even worse. Like that guy, he had a blank check after Succession to do whatever the hell he wanted.
And he makes this.
It's pretty terrible. That's really frustrating.
I will say I like Corey Michael Smith. I don't know where I've seen him.
Saturday night.
Yeah. Chevy Chase.
Oh, okay.
Maria loves Saturday Night.
I love that Gotham movie, right?
If you watch that.
He was the Riddler.
Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan, but I really liked him in this. So, good performances, just not a very good movie.
Cool.
And then I finished Carol. The night off with The Accountant 2.
Yeah, not
disappoint. You guys were like on the ball. This movie was fucking awesome. I love it. Yep. I cannot wait to see The Accountant 3 now.
Yeah, bring it. Keep making them.
The interactions between Ben Affleck and John Bernthal could be my favorite thing this year.
The bar scene.
It's so good. It's so good.
Did you enjoy the neurodivergent school of kids who help?
It's like X-Men.
They're all
charged. I'm like, this is like X-Men, guys.
There's like 20 Charles
Professor Xavier and his school of autistic kids.
Yeah.
His genius kids that save, that help the accountant.
It's so funny.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous, but it's so great.
But this entire thing is ridiculous. Like, I still don't really understand why this one family was so important that everybody is trying to find them and save this kid. There are a lot of other kids with, disabilities.
Not with the right autism. This was apparently, the correct frequency.
I do have some issues with that, but generally speaking, the movie was just way too much fun to care.
It's so great.
I know I said this before, but the one thing about this year is that a bunch of movies that we didn't think were going to be very good have hit. The Amateur, this, it's been a rough year, but then occasionally you watch one of these and it's just like, oh, okay, this is fun.
Yeah.
I need this.
Yeah, it is. It's, doesn't require a lot of brain power, but it's also not stupid.
No.
It's not totally stupid. I'm like, okay, I can use more of these movies. But really, it's just about John and Ben doing their thing because they are hilarious together. Mm-hmm. You don't love me. You didn't look for me. You had my number. You could have called.
I love the beginning where you find out that he's like adopting a dog.
He's trying to get the dog 2 weeks early.
It's so funny.
It turns out he's a cat person.
Yeah.
Or that
actually that scene in the truck is hilarious. He's been holding the cat for the last 2 hours. When do I get to hold the cat?
Yeah.
Or he's having that conversation with that woman, and the woman looks like she's just been terrorized, and then you have no idea why Bernthal is just having this conversation with her, and then
eating ice cream.
Then it kind of pans, and it's just like, oh shit!
Killed everyone in that room.
Yeah,
I mean, Gavin O'Connor is a really good filmmaker, and he's really great making these. So
yeah, he's always been a good shooter.
He makes some good movies.
Yeah. I even have a soft spot for The Way Back.
Yeah, yeah. I like The Way Back.
Yeah.
I needed a pick me up, and that was definitely a pick me up.
Nice. Well,
I think The Amateur is on VOD in a week, so everybody who didn't see it in the theater,
this is Bill's movie, the recommended movie of the year.
We
can change the name of this podcast to The Amateur.
No, but nobody's talking about that film. I thought it was way better than it should have been. So
I'm gonna see it. So
yeah, if we can do one thing, we can tell people to go and see good fun movies that they don't think are going to be good and they actually are. So
can I actually finish on a downer? I watched Seven Veils, which I knew it wasn't going to be good, but I really, really like Amanda Seyfried.
And why I needed
to see it. It's so bad.
Yeah, why did they hold it for so long?
Because it's so bad.
Was
that 3 years ago, Viv?
Two at least.
It's so bad. I don't even know what else to say. It's just so overwrought, and the concept doesn't work. And it's trying to get at some big ideas that never really materialize. And Amanda Seyfried just feels like she's swimming through this content with no direction, which is really sad because I really like her and I think she's super talented. And it's sad to see her in a bad movie.
Yeah, it's like, what's the point? There's so much of it. Great. You're following your mentor's path of doing Salome, and it's a very emotionally taxing thing to do, especially when you're in the process of getting canceled or whatever the fuck. And it's just it goes nowhere. The worst thing is I saw it at VIFF, and then there was the Q&A with Adam McGoyan, and I always sit front row, so I felt awkward about getting up and leaving. But then later in the festival was that I just came for the riot, and I sat through that Q&A too, and it made me really mad because I really did not like that movie. I think I harped on that movie here on the podcast about how misguided I think it was. And I think after that, I'm like, no, you know what? If I didn't like the movie, I'm not going to stick around for the fucking Q&A. I'm making that commitment to myself from now on. Life's too short. for that. I'm gonna walk.
How dare you say bad things about Viv royalty cat Jamie? Okay.
I'm sorry.
Man, Viv loved
her. She didn't have one last year though, did she?
Oh, I know, but like, man, all those screenings are nuts.
I know. Yeah. That was fucking packed.
Like, yeah.
They are good at getting the word out about their movies, which is
The basketball one where they had like basketball players, and I wasn't even at that screening, and the whole like street was shut down. They were playing basketball, and I'm just like, what the fuck?
I like the Grizzly Truth. I thought it was fun.
No, but like
I never saw it. I saw this Finding.
No, it was Finding Big Country.
That's the one I saw.
That's the one I saw too, which I really like.
Because then they had The Grizzly Truth was her next movie after.
Yeah, that. I watched the screener on a television where it should have been.
It was like a 30. Well, I mean, because I like Just Game for the Riot was a 30 for 30 episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I just.
All right. So I'm sorry to have brought it down to not great Canadian cinema. Hopefully one of you can redeem us.
Well, nobody can elevate like the king of Canadian cinema.
I don't really have any Canadian cinema to talk about unless you count the new Mike Flanagan film. Doesn't he live here?
Yeah, I have the new Mike Flanagan movie on my list as well.
He probably lives nearby when he's shooting.
And I have a separate film that was also filmed in Vancouver. So nice. I do have CanCon.
Okay, Steve, hit us with the CanCon.
Okay. It's further up in my thing, so here we go. All right. So let's Bill and I get our thoughts out of the way, I guess. The mystery screening at Landmark beginning of last week was Life of Chuck, which I kind of deduced when the tickets went on sale and I saw the runtime. And I really like this film. I like the ambiguity of the opening act, and I like what Flanagan and Stephen King are trying to say in this film. Also, as a Flanagan fan, the cast in this movie just makes me smile every time a new person that's worked with him before appears on the screen in this one. And what Melissa said about Kate Siegel's beauty really bowls me over with the first shot of Kate Siegel in this movie as the teacher. The camera loves her, like, and she's just radiant sunshine. And a lot of this movie is heavy-handed in his delivery of his message and everything, but I just honestly, in maybe it's just me and just how I'm feeling in life right now, but it's just like the movie I needed to have. And I can really understand why this film won the audience award at TIFF. It's a movie that honestly made me feel good. And there's an ambiguity, like I said, the ambiguity is going to bother a lot of mainstream viewers, and especially that first act. That's the third act. There's a lot that I really loved about this film.
So, two things. What did you think of the middle act?
The middle act was like very dreamlike. Very dreamlike.
God, this is meandering. The first act is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I was just like, wow, this movie is awesome. I understand why this won the People's Choice Award. This movie is science fiction. I don't know what's going on other than the voiceover won't shut the fuck up telling me everything. My God.
And you have Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, exactly. And Karen Gillan. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Karen Gillan. Then the second act started. I'm like, okay, this slowed right down. Okay, this is fine. He's dancing. Okay. I'm supposed to feel something here. I'm not. Third act, he starts explaining stuff. Other than the fact that he puts so many freaking foreshadowing things, I'd already figured it out, unfortunately. It's good. I just thought it coasted. The last two acts coast. The first act is so incredible, and it bothers me that he could not find a way to sustain that awesomeness throughout the entire film. But at the same time, it's a Stephen King film where I think the book is more monologue than actual like plot. So it's hard to, and I guess you got to, his way of doing it was to have a narrator, but I don't think the narrator worked, even if I'm not going to ruin who the narrator is because people haven't seen this movie.
We already did last episode.
Did we? Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. I just didn't think it was great. I can understand why Neon kind of didn't put this out at Oscar time, because I think it's going to make people have weird thoughts about it. And I think it'll be more dissected once it actually hits. It's good. I just don't think it's great, which is terrible because I think Mike Flanagan's a real talent. And Mia Sara's incredible. She still, it's just like,
so nice to see her again.
Be still my beating heart.
Yeah,
it's really nice to see her.
Yeah, and it's fun to, as Steve said, it's fun to see all the Mike Flanagan regulars, and
including the man himself.
Yeah,
the funeral scene.
But yeah, like Rahul Kohli's in it.
Yeah,
who I think is awesome. He's in everything.
No Carla though.
Yeah.
No
voice.
She was there apparently, and they filmed a small scene with her, but they ultimately didn't use it.
I was very surprised by that one.
I didn't really
watch Henry Thomas.
I didn't really watch the credits, but was that Heather Langenkamp?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Sure
was. As the town gossip. Really great. Really great to see Heather.
Yeah.
She's fucking horror.
She was in the Midnight Club too.
Yes. So. Yes. Yeah. He loves his casts,
Well, then clearly people like working with him or they wouldn't keep coming back, right? I think to reiterate what we said last time, I don't dislike the movie. I just think it's disappointing. And Bill, when you said the first act is really, really good, I was like, yes, the first act set us up really well. And then it kind of did not deliver on that first act, which is disappointing. That said, I think I like the movie more because of hearing him talk so passionately about it.
Yeah.
I just cannot disconnect those two things. So I think, like, objectively, I don't think the movie is great, but I still, like, his passion for it is really intoxicating. And it's hard to not feel happy that, you know, somebody has put this out into the world with so much love.
I also think, like, Steve's point about, like, this is a feel-good movie, you walk away feeling good about it, makes the fact that it won the audience award at TIFF, like, that much more understandable. Because, I mean, all four of us go to movie festivals, we know what film festivals are like. It's a lot of doom and gloom. Like, there's a lot of drama. It's a lot of tragedy. There's not a lot of movies that are like this that come to a film festival. So it's like, I don't know. As soon as you said that, Steve, I was like, this is really twigging, like, why it won the audience award. Like, there just are not a lot of happy films that come out of a film festival. So I can completely understand why this took
And it's like not like happy. Like Chuck dies. Like the whole thing, the whole movie is about Chuck dying. Like that. Thanks for 39 great years. You're gonna die, and that the entire world snuffs out with Chuck, but it still manages with that time to make me that's like kind of like a sweetly reflecting film that. I don't know, this honestly does feel like Mike Flanagan just wanting to make something of his oeuvre that is like very self-reflective, and it's being marketed like a faith-based movie as well. And on that level, if faith-based movies were done with this kind of storytelling, then I would probably celebrate them a lot more because this one.
Hey, man, whatever sells movie tickets and makes them more money at this point, I don't know.
Yeah, like, hopefully more people see this than Dr. Sleep, which I thought was a massive masterpiece. So,
yeah.
But, you know, I want Mike Flanagan to do well.
Just
to
make more movies, yeah.
I also want Mark Hamill to do well.
Yeah, me too. I really like him in this movie.
I want Carl Laemmle to do well. You know, all these character actors who are there who show up and just destroy for like 5 or 10 minutes.
I know. We, like we just fleeting. I think you both said it, the Matthew Lillard. That scene is fucking great. That scene great. Is
so good. So good.
It's so good. And I love Chiwetel Ejiofor in this movie, too. The conversation over the phone with Karen Gillan over, like, because you feel their history as well as, like, where they connected and also where they don't connect. And it's very interesting and very well done. So I enjoyed that quite a bit.
David Damashian shows up to like destroy for like 2 minutes and has a really funny joke about
fucking Pornhub.
So the good. Pornhub joke.
So great. Yeah. Really, really, really funny stuff.
What do we do with a Pornhub?
Yeah. Not a bad movie.
No.
No. Definitely do worse than that movie.
Yes. The other Canadian content, just because it was filmed there, is because it was filmed in Vancouver, as I watched Locked with Bill Skarsgård and Anthony Hopkins, which is a remake of, I forget where this film, I think it's a Dutch maybe, it was called 4x4, and it played South By, I think maybe 3 years ago. A lot of people that liked that movie said they didn't really see where a remake would be made. But of course, Americans step in, want to make a remake. And I didn't realize till the credits that this was David Yaroveski made this film, who did Brightburn. And I was very surprised by this movie. I thought this was really solid shit. And Bill Skarsgård is great in it. It's all basically in the cab of this, like, really sleek and sexy fucking Land Rover, and with electrified seats that you can tase the fuck out of whoever's sitting in them. And I thought it was a pretty well done film that was really slick in how it was shot. And I like Bill Skarsgård a lot.
I like Michael Eklund. I see he's in this. So hey.
Yeah, really quickly at the beginning and the end, there's some more CanCon there, Michael Eklund. He's a Vancouver guy, or is he
a Vancouver guy?
Vancouver guy. That's what I thought. Yeah. So gotta love him. And this is a great performance from Bill, as per usual. I'm not looking at you, Crow remake. but yeah, I dig this one. Should I continue?
Go for it.
Okay. Karate Kid Legends. This movie is so cheesy and so corny. But it just fits really well into that Karate Kid mold. And, you know, when I think about it, the Karate Kid movies have all kind of delivered on exactly what they're supposed to be. The original trilogy, next Karate Kid, and even the Jaden Smith one. They're all like pretty solid movies in their own regard. So Legends is pretty good. For what it is. Ralph Macchio doesn't show up till like the end-ish.
And as I said last episode, it's really fast.
Oh, super fast. Like that. Yeah. It's just like breezy fast. I thought that kind of Josh Jackson is kind of the MVP of this movie. Kind of like a big piece of what I liked. And holy fuck, Wyatt Olef is getting older and way taller every time I see him.
And man, there's a lot of assholes in karate.
Yeah. Right? It's either you're a good virtuous guy or you're an asshole dick that runs a terrible dojo.
Yeah.
And maybe maybe there are just terrible dicks in Karate Kid movies.
How the fuck are they fighting on the top of a skyscraper too? Like,
do not ask these questions.
What is going on?
Steve, do not ask these questions. I won't.
I'll enjoy it more if I don't. Sean Burns, Dangerous Animals, his first film in 10 years. This film fucking rocks.
Didn't open here.
What? It didn't?
No.
I got a screener from Elevation to watch it. And it's playing at my theater here in Penticton.
What the hell?
Jay Courtney, I'm going to say this is the performance of his career. Like, this is such a great, like, dirty, rusty, like, Wolf Creek-like movie. And like a very Bushman-like performance. And the lead of this movie, Hesse Harrison, is really solid. I think really establishes it herself. And it has probably my favorite shot of the year, at least maybe when it just comes to horror. I don't want to say it at all because it's a spoiler, but it's beautiful. I really like Sean Burns' movies. I wish he would make them more often, because Devil's Candy, the film he did 10 years before this one, is fucking awesome. The fact that people don't talk more about it when it comes to like that satanic type of horror baffles me. And The Loved Ones,
I was going to say his first film, so awesome.
Diabolically fucked up.
So good.
It's so fucked up. Yeah. And I really like Sean Byrne quite a bit. So I hope for more from him. We have a best movie of the year. It was already brought to the podcast by Bill. Friendship is nice. One of the greatest experiences I've had in theaters this year. There is so much awkwardness that it made my stomach hurt. I was laughing so hard. I think just Bill and I have seen this movie at this point, right?
Yeah, I think so.
There's things in this movie that I can't believe that Tim didn't partially write this movie himself, because it feels very I Think You Should Leave. But there is a unpredictability and the predictability of this movie that is on another level. And I've never seen a movie like this movie. I really haven't.
I'm going to be really vague. Maybe the funniest thing I've heard in a movie this entire year was Kate Mara talking about what she did in the sewer system.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh my God.
There's also, because obviously from the trailers, you know that he gets outcasted from Paul Rudd's group of friends and everything, that he goes and like crashes the party. It's so the crazy. Odd. It's the craziest and most hilarious scene.
This movie gave me weird anxiety that I didn't think was going to happen. Yeah, it's a strange film, but in a really great way.
Is it weird? Did it give you anxiety because it's a male friendship movie?
No, just the situations that he's in. Okay. It's just really, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just a really weird guy. He does really dumb things that normal people just don't do. Like, your parents should have taught you better. What is your problem, sir?
I can't handle the show.
Like, my partner laughs his ass off watching it. And I'm like, this is just deeply unfunny to me. Like, I don't get it at all. Like, this is not my level of humor.
You're going to love this movie.
Yeah.
So I can't see myself going to see this movie. Like, honestly.
It's the thing that I can slightly compare it to, but it's all, this one's also in a different vein, is that Nathan Fielder show, The Curse, with Emma Stone.
Which I also haven't seen. Weird show. Yeah, very, very odd.
And makes you feel uncomfortable. The improv scene alone in that series.
That series is so uncomfortable. That entire series is uncomfortable. It is so... Emma Stone's character is so unlikable. And she is like the epitome of pretty much every Instagram star. And it just rubs me the wrong way.
And the begging for friendship and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just so irksome. Like, the entire thing is just... Ugh.
And then Benny Safdie.
Who is like really great and really, really terrible human
being.
He's
a horrible human being. Like, the worst that
show,
human being.
Like, that's the show that I can't recommend to anyone because... No. It's like tough. It was not a fun watch, but I could not look away. It is the prime example of a train wreck. Like, it's not a bad show. It's just, it is so uncomfortable, but you're like, you're glued to it. You're like, oh, these people are all horrible. Why am I watching this? And I cannot turn it off.
Well, tell them to watch Nathan For You then.
Yeah, exactly. I have the whole series. I have it on DVD.
That show is incredible.
It's really good. Yeah. I also watched I Don't Understand You with Nick Kroll and Andrew Reynolds, which is they're a gay couple that are in the midst of landing an adoption. And they go to Italy to... kind of have like a one last hurrah reconnection before the child arrives. And it's basically a comedy of errors as family member, Nick Kroll's, hooks him up with this old Italian cook is going to cook for him in her house. So they end up going out to the remote countryside and a power outage happens and they accidentally knock her down the stairs and she dies. So Q Morgan Spector comes in as her son to visit his mom. The problem is they don't speak Italian and these Italian people don't speak English. The whole movie, hence the title, I Don't Understand You, is all predicated on the fact that nobody can understand each other. It's funny, and the chemistry between Nick Kroll and Andrew Rannells is fantastic. But there's something in the third act that feels completely unresolved and really bugs me and kind of took away from this movie a lot, that I just felt like this movie was too easily wrapped up. So it kind of sours a bit with me. At the prompting of Chloe, I watched The Ugly Stepsister on Shudder, which is a movie that had a lot of buzz. A lot of people were fucking talking about this movie as the directorial debut of Emily Christine. And this movie is fucking gross.
Body horror brutal from LA.
It's body horror retelling of Cinderella from the stepsister's point of view, and the cosmetic surgery shit in this movie is horrifying. There's I'll just call the scene the nose job, is just the sound alone in this scene is blood curdling. It is but the movie is very, very effective, disturbing, gory, really like goopy and gross, but also against its like lush and velvety backdrop that is so gorgeous to look at. It's such a crazy juxtaposition that I found myself like kind of entranced by this film. And amazing for a first feature, for this to be her first feature. Like she's got a bold future ahead of her. So I really, really dug that one. So we're talking about, you know, if Dan Stevens is in a movie, you have to watch it.
Oh, did you see The Ritual?
I did see The Ritual. Oh. And fuck, this movie was just really bad. Really, really, really bad. Even Dan Stevens couldn't save this movie. It felt so cliche. Like, it kept running into potholes of cliches. Because, of course, Dan Stevens runs a parish, but he's losing his faith. And then as a favor to the church, they take in this German priest played by Al Pacino, and his mission essentially to save this woman that he believes is possessed. And this movie has some cool exorcism like special effects, but never gets into any sort of landscape where it feels pressing or scary at all. Al Pacino's got the craziest German accent, yeah, and like worst messy hair going on. I took a, because VVS sent Chloe and I screeners for it, so we were kind of laughing back and forth about this movie, and sent her a picture of Al Pacino's hair, and it's just like, he's just looking rough. Yeah, and Ashley Green's terrible in this film.
Okay, let's be honest. She's not a good actress.
No, she's not. I'm surprised.
She's never been good in pretty much anything. I'm surprised
to see her in a movie that's getting released theatrically, if I'm being honest. You know, I would probably see Jackson Rathbone in a movie before I'd see her in a movie.
This is going to be really vague, but the last time I saw Ashley Green, it was in a movie where two people were stuck in a room for like a year, and they had like privileges, and one of the privileges is that the guy got Ashley Green. Do you remember this film? It was weird.
No,
it was Canadian. Weird. I should know it. I am the king of Canadian film.
Yeah.
But I forgot.
You know, if this was a YouTube show, you would have that title appear right below you.
It's totally.
Listen, since we devolved into Twilight movies with characters from Twilight that end up in rooms, I rewatched Panic Room. It slaps. It's so good.
That movie is so great. And the fact that they're good. Like, David Fincher's first failure. And it's like, well, but fuck you. It's still a great film.
It is still super good. It actually, I think it plays better now than it did the first time I saw it. It's pretty solid.
I love when Jared Leto gets killed and he does that spin in the doorway.
I forgot he was in that. I'm like, is that Jared Leto with really bad brains?
Yeah.
I feel like it's Jared Leto playing Jared Leto too.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Like
the character that's as close to his actual personality.
Agreed. Oh, that movie is so good.
The movie was called The Immaculate Room. It has Emile Hirsch and Kate Bosworth in it.
Oh,
I
shit,
like Kate
yeah.
Bosworth. I yeah. also like Emile Hirsch, but it's not good, eh?
He's a douche, though.
He is a douche.
He chokes people.
Yeah, he's a douche.
Yeah. I got two more. I enjoyed Ballerina.
I had
a fun time with it. Len Wiseman hasn't made a film that solid in a long time.
So he directed half of it.
Who directed the other half then? Was it Chad Stahelski? Stahelski?
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So when it goes to the town, I'm going to be vague. That's Stahelski.
So, the whole town thing is Stahelski?
Pretty much.
Supposedly,
Wiseman shot the film, then they took it away from him and reshot that entire last act.
Because that had to have all been shot way later too, right? Because I feel like Keanu's involvement upped during reshoots.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like. And Lance Reddick's in it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so this was shot a while ago.
Yeah, what I kept felt. I felt like most of this must have been shelved for a while. Ana de Armas was made in a goddamn lab, though.
Yeah, she's incredible.
She's just her look has so much charisma that I will follow her in any action film. And as far as like being as part of the John Wick universe, it kind of works. I don't know. It was fun enough. Gabriel Byrne loves to choose scenery as a villain
because he's really good at it.
Yeah.
I also know his real name, but his name is Al Swearengen. It's not Ian McShane. It's Al Swearengen.
Al Swearengen. That's so funny.
Yeah.
I love Ian McShane.
It's a fun movie. Like I expect it to be a lot
worse. Action scenes are
really good.
Awesome. Especially everything in that town scene. When she's bringing out fucking ice skates and shit, I'm like, this is fucking great.
Yeah. Flamethrower versus hose.
Yeah. Oh, and she gets there and the whole town attacks her. I'm like, yeah, I'm so in for this. Like, that's fun. And like Marina, I'm going to finish off in a down note. The woman in the yard.
I told you it was bad.
What a waste of time. It doesn't even feel like worthy enough of telegraphing this film.
No.
And it's just dull. I thought it started off well, though. Danielle Deadwyler is way better.
Everybody is better than this,
or the piano lessons. Like which the I last, seen. Yeah. I saw it at VIF. Yeah. Bill was there.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was great. Ugh. Yeah, it was wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Go Washingtons. Yeah, I don't know. There's just not much to say. There's nothing scary. They do reveals in this movie way too early. And by the time it's all like unraveling to show you what the true reality is, it's like, who fucking cares?
I remember seeing that trailer and being like, well, I don't think I want to see that.
Yeah.
didn't really sell me at all.
This lady just sitting in the yard.
The trailer was interesting, and I still think the movie starts off well enough, and it has an interesting concept, just doesn't deliver.
It's just trying to play that kind of M. Night Shyamalan outside ambiguity right away.
The fact that we're now ripping off M. Night Shyamalan is really sad.
Well, and it makes you're like, she's dead, isn't she? You know, like it just makes you just like automatically assume things because they're playing things so etherealy. Like, why the fuck are they in the middle of there's just so much shit. This just doesn't add up.
I'm going to remake M. Night Shyamalan film, and I'm going to go to a concert, and I'm actually going to go down that hole in the floor with my little girl.
We should go down there. This, in our movie, she's like, let's go down there.
Listen, if you're going to remake an M. Night Shyamalan movie, you need to remake The Happening.
I think they should make an M. Night Shyamalan movie where every character is played by M. Night Shyamalan.
And his daughter.
And his daughter.
Let's not.
And his whole family. It's called M. Night Shyamalan's Family.
Listen, at least the nepotism, he does not hide it. He made that movie to give his daughter a chance.
Did they release her music on like CD? Like, I wonder if the soundtrack has all of her.
It's on Spotify, but I did look at it right after the movie came out. It has like 3,000 listens. I'm like, well, that's a failure.
Naomi Scott got a 5-song EP as Sky Riley for the Smile movie. I actually have them on my liked list. There are some bangers.
There are some good ones there. I fully agree.
Co-written by Tate McRae, I believe.
Introducing Bubba Shyamalan as Skip.
Bubba Shyamalan. I'm a big fan of Bubba Shyamalan. Give him a 4-picture deal right now.
All right. Who's gonna go next?
I don't have a lot, so Steve pretty much took care of everything. That's good. Melissa's got some stuff, so we'll let her go last. I saw the movie that you guys didn't see, Jane Austen Wrecked My Life. It's absolutely fine. I think Marina...
Which means we would have loved it.
Totally.
Pretty much.
It's very exactly what you think it's going to be. I probably shouldn't have watched this.
So I'm going to love it.
Yeah. The person I went to go and see the movies with on last Tuesday wanted to see this, and I went along. But yeah, it's fine. You guys will enjoy it. And then later that night, I saw Dogma.
Yes.
Yay.
Just as good as it usually is. I've seen this movie probably 20 times.
Yeah. I still probably know it off by heart.
Pretty much. It still always strikes me how good Ben Affleck is in this movie.
He's so great.
Yeah, he's very commanding and just like he has his purpose. He needs to get back to heaven. And Matt Damon's there is his comic foil. It's quite funny.
And I love the boardroom scene so much.
Yeah. The opening airport scene where it's so good. The poop monster. It's fun. Chris Rock on the bridge. You know, it's classic stuff. Some of it might be a little problematic. Of course it is. It was made 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Or however, 25 years ago.
25.
Yeah. It's good. It's probably my second favorite Kevin Smith movie before Chasing Amy. It's good. And that is pretty much all I have other than the new season of Rick and Morty is really good. If you guys haven't watched it.
Nice.
We have not.
Solar Opposites is my show now.
I
couldn't get into that.
Oh, I fucking love it.
Dan
Stevens is the voice.
The last season of Rick and Morty wasn't very good, but the first two episodes of this season are quite good. So good to see it refocused.
We no longer have Adult Swim, so I am waiting until I get more of it. But Bob's Burgers is also back on a new night, Thursday nights, guys.
Weird.
I am in heaven. I've
never seen that show.
It's so funny. I love H. John Benjamin.
Oh, that show is like chef's kiss. It's what I would have wanted my family to be like.
Wow.
Dysfunctional love. Okay, Melissa, bring us home.
Okay, I'm going to try and make this quick because I did see a lot of stuff. I streamed a lot of stuff this last
week. I love it.
We go through phases.
So, yeah.
I can definitely tell you have Mubi.
Yep. Yeah. I have comments about that in a moment.
Okay.
So we can start with Netflix's Nonnas.
Vince
Vaughn.
Oh, boy.
Lorraine Bracco. And Talia Shire
as stereotypes
and Susan Sarandon. Yes.
All stereotypes. They even have a makeover.
I don't know. I don't know what the Italian word for schmaltz is. that's what this is. You're getting exactly what you think you're going to get. Now I have to say I've wanted to go to this restaurant for a long time because I heard about it years ago. And the last time I was in New York with my mom, I really wanted us to go, but it's on Staten Island, so yeah, it's kind of a pain in the ass. So we didn't make it over there. And now I'm like, oh, now it's probably going to get wrecked now, because now it's in a Netflix movie. Everybody and their mom's going to be there. And
Vince Vaughn's going to be there. Terrible.
And also, this is like maybe the only movie I've ever seen where Vince Vaughn is not snarky at all.
He's a nice guy.
Like, he's just a genuinely nice guy for the whole film.
Yeah.
Like, even not a single sarcastic comment.
Even when he's like, even when he's talking to the food critic and the guy's like not even giving him any daylight whatsoever, he's still not a dick.
Still not a dick.
Wait, are you saying this is actually watchable?
Yeah. I mean, listen.
Is it
great? Is it gonna get awards? No, but I mean, if you're looking for something, like, if you know, if you're watching something with multi-generations, this is probably okay. And it's not terrible. And also, I gotta say, my favorite thing in the whole movie, so Talia Shire plays a former nun who becomes a cook at this restaurant. And then at one point she's talking about how, like, she's really hoping her family can make it down from Philadelphia, and I was like,
man, this movie's written by AI. What the hell?
Yeah.
Like, if that was not a Rocky reference.
Yeah.
Like, well, come on.
And didn't she also allude to that she had she was in love with a woman too?
Yes.
It was just like so throwaway. Yep. It was after Susan Sarandon gives them all makeovers.
Yep.
And
after they stop hating each other.
But they still hate each other. They're still like, Sicily tour. Bologna.
Did they eat a cannoli?
There was definitely cannolis. Campbell Scott in the most throwaway moment of the year.
Yeah.
I was like, it's Campbell Scott. He just gets to look pompous.
I don't know. It's fine. It's fine.
From the director.
I liked the friendship between Vince Vaughn and Joe
Manganiello. Yeah.
They're kind of lovely, the two of them.
From the director of Dear Evan Hansen.
Ignore that part.
I still really enjoy the fact that Melissa will watch Nonas but won't watch Madam Web. Come on.
What's up with that?
Come on.
What is up with that?
I'm not going to question it, Melissa. You're fine with me.
Yeah. Okay, Bill, I'm sorry. It's now 3-1 on presents. Because I also really dug it.
That movie sucks.
Yes.
That movie was number 37 or 38 of VIFF last year. What are you talking about?
You should rewatch it. It is so good.
I will say, like, when it started, I kind of got a little bit of Ghost Story David Lowery vibes. And I was like, oh, that's a very high bar, because I fucking loved a Ghost Story. Like, that movie made me bawl. And this really went in a direction I wasn't expecting. And I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And I think this kind of, I don't know, I like this kind of gimmicky filmmaking, ghost
when POV done well.
Film. When it's done well, yeah, it's fun. And I think there's some like interesting stuff in here around like family dynamics and teenage male toxicity.
Oh, and just for the record, I think we're 3-2 because I don't think Dan liked it. Yeah, that's right, Dan. I need it when I can get it, so I'm bringing Dan up. Okay.
Okay. Listen, you continue talking. Let me check with Dan what he felt, because I don't remember. Well,
Chloe put it as her number 8 film of 2024. And I let her have it because it didn't come out until January in actual release. But she didn't understand the rules when it came to watching films at VIFF.
Rules, schmules, I say. anyway, yeah, it was cool. And it's on Amazon Prime if folks are looking for it. And it's also short. It comes in under an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Bill is right. Dan did not care for it.
Yes.
He heard his name and came to the door. Because he's lovely.
Easily my 12th favorite Paranormal Activity film. Easily.
Terrible.
Okay, well, it goes way downhill from there, because then I watched some spoils.
Is that with Adriana DeBose?
Adriana DeBose. Yeah.
Sorry, what is this called?
House of Spoils. Terrible.
Like a cook.
Oh, haunted kitchen.
Haunted garden. Is it a haunted garden?
Yeah, haunted garden. Yeah, it's just bad. It's bad. It's really, really, really badly written. And if you know anything at all about the hospitality industry or restaurants, this film will drive you completely batshit up the wall. So just skip it. Just don't watch it. Okay. And then we come to the first of many movies. And I will say, I just heard that Mubi may be on the BDS list. So I need to find out
what is the BDS list. I'm confused.
So the boycott, divest, sanction list of businesses and entities that profit from Israel-Palestine or Israel's occupation of Palestine. So I'm going to have to check into that, because if it is actually on the list, then I will probably end up canceling my membership. But for the meantime, I just watched Magic Farm, which is a brand new film that just came out on Mubi, starring, it has like a quite incredible cast, including Chloe Sevigny, our buddy Simon Rex, Alex Wolff. This is a really, really quirky film. Which will not work for everybody, but if you dig weird, quirky indie films, this will work for you. So it's kind of like a big satire on privilege, content creation, appropriation, exploitation, and disparity. So it's basically like this crew of these Americans that make some kind of television show. And they're tracking weird dance trends around the world. So they end up in this like small village in Argentina. And then the story that they wanted to tell isn't there. So they kind of get the townspeople to make something up, like to make up that they have these weird dance parties where they wear gift bows on their heads. So instead of, but the backdrop of the town is that the town is being like constantly sprayed over with chemicals by like big agriculture. So there's like this perfect opportunity to tell like an actual documentary story, but these people are so fucking self-absorbed and obsessed with content creation that instead they conscript the town to make up something. So it's, it's odd. It's quirky. But also, I don't know, I kind of dug the underlying messaging in it. I also finally got around to seeing Bring Them Down, which is the Christopher Abbott and Barry Keoghan film. I mean, Abbott is super impressive in this movie. He's speaking Irish, for God's
sake. When is he not?
I had to like look at it. I'm like, he's American, isn't he? And then I like looked it up. I'm like, yeah,
Marina,
he's American.
Have you seen Wolfman?
Listen, does not detract from a career of like spectacular acting.
I don't know. That movie was really bad.
It was really,
but
really
he is
bad,
really, but, really good.
Yeah, but James White was enough to set him up for a career of just like that. I was just on board for all of it. And Bring Him Down, Bring Them Down is like his like reconnection to that actor again.
I mean, he's good, and this is really intense, and like the film starts with a car accident where essentially he kills his mom. But then he's the protagonist that you're actually supposed to root for, resonate with. So it's quite interesting. I think for me the only thing that didn't fully work, like, I love seeing Abbott and Keoghan on screen together. Like, they're both just super intense actors. But I think the story would have been better served by a younger actor in that role. I think like it's supposed to be like a 16, 17 year old kid. And you know, Keegan's 32. That part of it for me, I think, was just kind of a little bit of I wish there had been a better vehicle for the two of them to be on screen together in. And there's also like a POV switch that happens in this movie that I think kind of wrecks the pacing a bit. It kind of detracts from the intensity of the movie. And I don't think it kind of gets back there at any point soon. But it was worth watching for sure. I mean, just for Abbott alone, because he's quite brilliant in this. And then I finally saw Miguel Gomez's Grand Tour, which he won the Best Director Cannes Award in 2024 for, which now I understand. I think this is a movie, Marina, you probably won't dig. Because it's, again, like a little bit of romantic, magical realism. The first part of the film actually reminded me a bit about La Chimera. Because the film starts off as it's this guy who he's about to be reunited with his fiance he hasn't seen in 6 years so that they can finally get married. And he freaks out and like takes off running away from her across Asia while she continues to like try and track him down. And it's not a super plot driven movie. Like, I feel like the plot is there to give them a reason to travel through Asia and to include like all of this kind of beautiful footage of various parts of Asia. Like, they kind of start in Burma, Myanmar, and then end up like through Singapore, Thailand, Vietnam, Philippines, Japan, China. And it's really kind of interesting because I guess this was filmed like right at the height of COVID. So like it took like 2 years to film, I guess, 2020 to 2022. And so parts of this film were actually directed by Gomez, like remotely, because he couldn't actually be there because he couldn't travel. And they use part of it is footage that they filmed and part of it is stock footage from these various parts of Asia that they then kind of like do a treatment to. The story itself is supposed to take place in 1917, but then you see like all of these kind of contemporary images of these different countries in Asia, and each segment, like when they show up in any country, the narrator shifts and the narration is then in the language of the country that they're in. And the two lead actors are supposed to be playing British people, but they speak Portuguese because he's a Portuguese filmmaker.
Yeah. I've never been a huge fan of Gomez. I just can never really get into his films. So I'm not surprised I'm not going to enjoy it. Arabian Nights is probably my favorite of them, and I still didn't love it.
Yeah, I just really loved the imagery. I found it really poetic. And I could, after reading about the making of the film, I could completely understand why they gave him the Best Director award at Cannes. There's, despite like what sounded like really disparate filming, like he was there, he wasn't there, they were using like stock footage and stuff that they shot, the fact that he like built what feels like a really cohesive and intentional film out of all of that is pretty impressive. So I can understand why he won that Best Director nod. Of the movies that I watched this week, it's weird how many of them had POV shifts. Because like, so there's the POV shift in Bring Them Down. There's a bit of a POV shift in Bring Her Back. And then there was also a POV shift, like from the protagonist to his fiance in Grand Tour. And I don't know how, like, it's just kind of weird to me sometimes when these things happen, like these themes emerge that shouldn't, because none of these movies are connected to one another in any way, shape or form, but they all sort of had that one element that was the same.
So I should probably rewatch that film. I saw it at VIFF probably like 2 days ago in like the 11 a.m. screening, and it was death. I was having a hard time staying awake. It was very slow, very beautiful, but slow.
Yeah, it's slow and beautiful, and I think it's more, I would say it's more travelogue than it is actually about the plot. Yeah. Like the plot was just a way to get them from location to location, I feel like. What I thought was way more interesting is, like, I think there's something, I think he's saying something about the wet, like about Western attitudes towards Asia, both in terms of colonialism, but then also in terms of like othering, and like that exoticizing and fetishizing of Asia. So yeah, I think it was really interesting, and the footage itself is just gorgeous.
Yeah,
I agree. I do think it's like super interesting that the film is supposed to take place in 1917. He's mixed all of this like contemporary footage in, like you're seeing modern cars and like all of these things supposedly in 1917. But the way that he is using it, and he makes it black and white, and because there's a magical realism feel, it all still feels like it fits together. And like, that's what I really appreciated about this movie, is I feel like it's a thing that should not feel like it works, and but somehow he makes it work. So, yeah.
Nice.
I keep circling around it, but I'm going to watch it eventually. It feels very daunting just with the runtime.
It's long and it is slow, so you have to be in the right frame of mind for it, I think.
All of his movies are long and slow.
Was Arabian Nights a two-part?
Yes.
Right.
And Taboo was also very long.
Yeah.
And for me, very daunting.
I haven't seen any of those films, so.
But I still watched Arabian Nights, so what do I know?
I remember a fellow reviewer going to those screenings at VIFF, and I was just like, I saw the run times on both, and I was like, I can't do two of those. Are you fucking kidding me?
I do. If nothing else, I support my countrymen. They make movies. Marina tends to be there. Generally.
That was the year of Manchester by the Sea and stuff.
I used to try to find the longest movie at VIFF every year and see it. But then I thought about it and just saw life was too short.
Plus, I was going to say, dude, it's so not worth it.
Plus, nothing is going to beat Best of Youth, which was 6.5 hours long with the 15-minute intermission in the middle.
Holy fuck. Where was that held at?
Granville number 6.
Oh, wow.
Also not terrible.
That's
can you imagine if he'd said the Cinema Deck?
No.
Which would not have surprised me.
But not hey, we've done 24-hour movie marathons in the Cinema Deck.
#truth.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anything else?
We were talking about TV earlier, and I probably should have brought this up at this point, but I love Department Q so much.
It's because it's so good.
Yeah. It is ridiculous. Like, first of all, Kate Dickey is a goddamn genius. I fucking love her in everything. Matthew Good is phenomenal here.
He's always phenomenal. I'm sorry to break it to you.
I've heard that Marina might like Matthew Good.
You think?
Just maybe.
He's a little too skinny here, I think. You know, he needs to eat a couple sandwiches. But
well, I mean, that goes with the character, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then Kelly MacDonald shows up also, who's not in enough stuff. And is.
I'm only two episodes in, but I'm like, of course it's Matthew Good. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah. It's great. It's really great. And I don't say that about a lot of police procedurals, but this one is really, really pretty fun. And then I was looking up the cast, and the guy that plays the Syrian is actually Kurdish, Russian born, and grew up in Sweden.
What?
Weird mix.
Displacement all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, but in this, he's playing a Syrian refugee,
wow.
And it's a great character. But yeah, it's just a phenomenal show. If you have Netflix, it's definitely worth watching.
Can I say, since we're talking TV, we finished Andor season 2, and it is continues to be the best of Star Wars things.
I
cannot imagine another Star Wars thing that will be this good.
Like I said, that Red Wedding episode is a fucking jaw dropper. Everybody dies.
Is it wrong that I enjoyed never have seen an episode of Andor just so I can tell people I've never seen Andor? Because it really pisses them off. Really?
Well, I mean, it doesn't piss me off, but I think you are missing out on some.
Like, I'm going to watch it and then just keep on saying I haven't watched it. People off.
And quite honestly, the final episode, like we watched the final episode, I'm like, damn it. Now I need to watch Rogue One.
I know, but see, this is the thing. So I thought Rogue One was way better until I watched Andor, and now Rogue One feels sort of disappointing after Andor.
Okay, so I haven't seen it since I saw it the first time theatrically. So, yeah. But as soon as like it wrapped, I was like, okay, now we need to watch Rogue One. It's too late to watch it tonight, but this is happening this week. So it's on our to-watch list for the week. But that show is just...
Yeah, it's so good. I will say, like, my other favorite of the Star Wars properties is actually the Clone Wars, like the animated series.
Yeah.
It is equally really smartly written and very political. I think that's why those two properties are so interesting, because the politics of them are interesting, and those politics are becoming way more relevant these days than they have been. So
I recommend The Bad Batch.
Yeah, Bad Batch is good.
Dan really liked The Bad Batch.
I fucking loved it. Yeah, I even got emotional at the end. I was like, it hit me in the
field. Melissa, are you done? I forgot something.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, Marina, get ready to be proud. So it took a couple weeks, but it finally hit Victoria, friends. I saw Sense and Sensibility in the theater, and let me just tell you, that's a glorious film.
I fucking told you.
Dang Lee, though, right? So yeah, it's like,
it's
Alan Rickman.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Yeah. I understand your love now. I hadn't seen it in years. I was the only male there.
Wait, but which version did you... Oh, yeah, okay. Yes, no, yep.
The Keira Knightley version.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you mean Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice.
No, that's what I meant. Yeah, sorry. I'm all over the place.
That's why I said Ang Lee.
Yeah, no, Pride and Prejudice. Yeah,
okay.
I'm all over the place. So, yeah, the women I went with told me I had to go and watch this.
So, because they are absolutely right.
No, but like... I don't quite understand why I didn't, I probably saw this theatrically when it came out and then listened to you talk about it for the next 25 years.
It's so true. The hand flex.
But yeah.
But it's not just the hand flex. There is so much more. I could go on. But
yeah. It's lovely.
It's glorious.
With Joe Wright. So
yeah. So yeah, I'm glad I did want to see it. But it didn't open, then it finally opened here. So Victoria has been missing some films. As I said, I didn't get the Jai Courtney film, which kind of pissed me off because I wanted to see that.
Yeah, I'd be pissed off too.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
And,
it's okay. You made up for it. You watched Pride and Prejudice.
So
that's okay. We're going to get the one that you're probably going to talk about in a second. I don't know if I'm going to be getting, so.
What, How to Train Your Dragon?
No, I'm getting that.
Isn't everybody getting that one?
Actually, me and the kid are going to that movie. So
Wait, has the kid seen the original?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
When I saw Jane Austen Wrecked My Life, I guess they played the wrong pre-show package. It was the French one. And in Quebec, How to Train Your Dragons is called Dragons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew that. Yeah.
Dragon.
Dragons.
Whatever works for you, man.
Yeah. So who wants to pick a movie? There's lots to choose from.
I can tell you which one I want to see. So
Materialist,
June 15th. How to Train Your Dragon.
13th.
Here we go. Fuck How to Train Your Dragon Part One. I like Part Two. I'm weird. It looks fine. I just don't. It's why. Just like
Money.
Snow White, just like Lilo and Stitch.
Money.
I know, but like I'm getting tired of this. It's just no creativity anymore, other than the Philippou brothers and a bunch of Canadian filmmakers.
I will say though, the kid that they cast in How to Train Your Dragon looks exactly like the cartoon character.
Yeah.
Like that's some spot on casting there.
And Gerard Butler's playing his same role.
Are we picking this one?
No.
I'm not even going to have a vote for another movie, but it's not out until the 20th.
I'm not even going to see that movie. I'm done. Sorry. I just am.
Yeah, that's totally valid.
Yeah. Materialists, a new Celine Song movie.
I'm in.
Looks great. Dakota Johnson. Let's see if she can smile.
Dakota Johnson for all
no shit.
She's the only drawback for me with that film because
I really don't like her.
I don't like her. I don't know if I'm going to be getting that. So
that would suck. Something called the Unholy Trilogy with Pierce Brosnan and Sam Jackson. It's a Western. I don't know. Might be like direct to VOD or something.
I think it is.
Yeah. Echo Valley, which I think is Apple Plus. Yep. Sydney Sweeney, Julianne Moore.
I'm in.
Yeah, looks pretty good. Something called a documentary called Prime Minister about Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister who shut New Zealand down during COVID.
Oh.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
That looks interesting. July 20th. Danny Boyle, friends.
Fucking happening.
This is my choice. This is my choice too. This is my pick. 28 years later.
Have any of you guys watched the first film lately?
No, but I'm going to.
Not in a while. Yeah, I'm going to.
I don't remember that film being so bloody unwatchable. That picture is like VHS quality.
Well, I mean, it was the 90s, dude.
No, he shot on 720p DV and on a 4K television. It looks like ass.
Can it just be the transfer?
No, it's just the movie.
Is there a 4K of it now?
No, they're never going to put a 4K out. It would look awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a blue... They're redoing the Blu-ray, but yeah, it's... I have the Blu-ray. It's out of print. And yeah, it's ugly. Still a great movie, though.
28 weeks later is one of Chloe's favorites.
Yeah.
Oh, because they're so good.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Rebel Wilson's back with Bride Hard.
I'm sorry,
the closing film of TIFF last year.
Oh, this is the movie. I would watch it just because of that all that drama, to be completely honest.
There was definitely some drama, wasn't there?
Yeah, for sure.
What is it called?
It's Bride Hard.
Okay.
Terrible.
Trey, what was the drama?
The producers were holding the film hostage, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it got selected for TIFF. She clearly wanted to send it there, and the producer said no. And there was a lot of back and forth. At the end of the day, did it end up playing TIFF?
Yep.
It did. Yeah.
It did. Yeah.
But it was only after a lot of public anger.
I think the most interesting thing is how we never heard about it again.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was coming out until about 2 hours ago.
Exactly. It's kind of like Magazine Dreams, how that one, they're just like, hey, and guess what? It's out.
Yep.
It's all Magazine Dreams is on DVD and Blu-ray now.
Wow. Gonna be a hot seller at Walmart.
Who knew? That's where I saw it. Weird.
Too bad, because that movie is really, really good.
It's really fucking good. He just turns out to be a piece of shit. So
yeah.
Pixar is back with Elio.
A movie that's been on the shelf for what, 4 years?
Yeah, it doesn't
think know. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember when Pixar was great?
Remember the golden years? They had like 2 decades of golden years, though.
Yeah. I also gave Inside Out to 5 stars, so I shouldn't talk.
Well, no, I really liked Inside Out too.
You guys are in the minority here. Well, yeah. I don't know if most like it. I can't speak.
I haven't seen it. I liked it more than the first movie.
I cried. A movie I liked at VIFF last year called Happy End. This Japanese school movie about students who are kept down by the man who rise up. It's really great. It was on my VIFF top 10 last year. I hope people get to see it. I think it's really special. It was one of the surprises at VIFF last year for me. So hopefully it'll open or... you know, be on Amazon or something in 2 months so people can watch it. There's a Aussie prison drama called Inside with Guy Pearce and Cosmo Jarvis. Yeah,
I'm into that.
I'm into that too.
And Cosmo? Shit, yeah.
Yeah. It's a animated Netflix film called K-Pop Demon Hunters.
It looks fucking amazing. Don't diss it.
I'm not.
I think it looks great.
thought it was an interesting name.
Oh, the trailer is hilarious. I think it looks great.
We heard about this movie called Everything's Going to Be Great with Bryan Cranston and Allison Janney. It was done by John Baird, who did that McAvoy movie, Filth.
Yep.
Oh, I liked Filth.
Yeah, I really liked Filth. I felt like I was like, Simon Rex is in this movie too.
It's turning into a thing.
It's the Rexissance.
The Rexissance. just for that, that's what we're changing the podcast name to. It's the Rexissance.
And last but definitely not least, a film I probably haven't seen since it opened. Brokeback Mountain's getting a re-release.
Yeah, it's playing.
Is it an anniversary screening?
I don't know, but has it been that long?
2005.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
there you go.
So 20 years.
Jesus. God, I'm fucking old. How does that movie feel like it was not like maybe 10 years ago?
Was Taking Woodstock the follow-up to that movie?
That wasn't a good movie.
I liked it.
Wow. Okay. Well, fuck that movie then.
So I think the movie is How to Train Your Dragon.
No. Yes, that's the one we choose. Sorry, Bill. You're on the outside.
Years later we can
make Bill as mad as he was about Mission Impossible, apparently.
Let's go.
Well, listen, I thought that this next edition was actually we're gonna get F1, and I'm really disappointed that
it's the week after.
But we will give you your F1. That'll be the movie of
I want my F1, damn it.
Supposedly it started screening and people are saying it's fun.
Cool. Oh, it looks fun. It looks big, big egos, big bravado, fun. Joseph Kosinski is a solid enough director for me to be pumped about his stuff.
He is very good at making these types of movies. I am all in.
Yeah. If your worst is Oblivion, then I'm
still. You're not doing so bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Brokeback Mountain, I always go and see movies on Christmas Day. And in 2005, on Christmas Day, I saw Brokeback Mountain and Munich.
Oh, shit.
That's a happy Christmas to you.
Yeah.
Munich Jesus the second Christ. One? That was the second one?
It was, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just on Christmas Day, you're seeing that arm, that blown up arm on the fucking ceiling fan.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And as the king of Canadian film, I remember watching Munich and going, that's Marie-José Croze, and nobody knew who she was.
Yeah, there you go. The burgeoning king of Canadian film.
Yes. Yes.
When he still feigned like he hated it.
Underrated Spielberg.
Absolutely. Nobody hey, he got talks shout about out and knocked up. He got a shout out and knocked up.
Yeah.
So it was part of pop culture, at least.
That movie is great.
Yeah. It's a really, really great movie.
All right. So 28 years later, it is.
Hell yes.
I'm in for it.
It's going to be good. It's going to be really good, I think. Maybe I'm setting it up too much. They've already got a spinoff film announced for January next year. The Bone Valley.
Cool. Is it still Garland and
produced by?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like they're overseeing all of it.
Cool.
I don't know. We'll see how this
Sony wants to double down.
Yeah. So, I guess that's it. It's very late. We've been going for 2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hours.
I'm kind of in a blur. Come on by atcpod.ca for links to all the things. Until the next show, where can folks find you?
I am Bill Harris. I am on Blue Sky, even though it's a dying platform, at that Bill Harris. I've never actually posted on there, I don't think. And I'm on Letterboxd at SoundJam69. And just an update, we still never recorded a podcast for Green Screen or Death.
No.
That is kind of our running shtick, though. We kind of do that. So
it's going to be like a Christmas this year. You're going to do a 2020 top list for 2024.
I'm hoping for that.
That'd
be awesome.
I almost kind of want to do that now.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that that's the case.
I was gonna do the 2024 and my mid-year list, but then I was just like, we're gonna record in August. So it'll totally work.
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, well, tell Adrian we all miss his velvet voice.
Agreed. You can find me on Letterboxd at The Marina.
Yeah.
You can also find me on Letterboxd at Melzy.
If there's social media, you can find me at The Steeple Dead.
The funny thing about Steve is he actually updates all the social media.
I do. Yeah, I do try to. You can find my website, stevesebbing.ca. I do a show on there every week with my daughter Chloe called What the Hell Should I Watch? I'm also on Shane Hewitt and the Night Shift Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Toronto's News Talk 1010, which is on the iHeartRadio network. And there's also a podcast you can look up and download wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm also on Tremble the Horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. We're off the last episode, so there's no new episodes right now, but check all those ones out. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. I already did the spiel about checking out the website. So until next time.
Hack the planet.